Okay, let's get started here. So we are on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We're up to the fifth line. So we're in the middle of a sugya regarding the definition of an ohel. So the Gemara asks, "V'savar Rabbi Yehuda kol ohel she'enu asui b'di adam eino ohel?" Does Rabbi Yehuda really believe that any ohel which is naturally made, which is not man-made, is not called an ohel? Ureminhu, the problem is we have a Mishnah Maseches Parah that says the following: Chatzeros hayu benuyos b'Yerushalayim al gabei asela v'sachtehem chalal mipnei kever hatahom. So basically, there were these courtyards that were built in Yerushalayim on top of this rock formation, underneath which was this cavity, this opening, to prevent tumah in case there was a dead body buried deep underground. This area, as we'll see in a second, was designed for kids.
Can
everyone please mute? So this area was designed, as we'll see in a second, for children to basically grow up in these places so that they would remain tahor and, you know, impervious from any sort of potential tumah in order to engage in the process of para aduma. So the Gemara continues to explain. So women would come, they would give birth in these enclosed chambers in this courtyard, and the kids would be raised there, so they would never become tumah. They wouldn't leave the area until such time that they were ready to go and engage in the process of para aduma. The Mishnah continues to explain, the Mishnah para, umevian shivarim ve'al gabein delasos. They would then, so now when it was time, let's say the kids were 6, 7 years old, now it was time to finally go do the para aduma. So they would bring these oxen with doors on their back, v'sinokos yoshen al gabein, these kids would sit on the back of the oxen, v'chosos shel evan bidem, holding these stone cups, higiu l'shiloach, they arrived at the me'ah shiloach, that was a stream that flowed outside of the mikdash, yardu l'soch hamayim umilum, v'alu v'yashtu lahem, they would, you know, basically descend, they would come down off the ox, they would draw out water in the stone cup, and then they would go back and sit on top of the ox. However, Rabbi Yossi Omer Mimakomo Hayamishal Shalom Mamale Mimne Keveratom. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says that the kids did not alight or ascend off of the ox, but rather they stayed on the ox and just lowered the cup down and drew out the water because there was a concern in case, on the off chance that there was a dead body buried underground somewhere, if they were to descend off the ox, they may become tame. But what's the point of this Mishnah? Visanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lohayu Mivin Delasos Elashvarim. So now the Gemara quotes from a Tosefta in Maseches Parah. Yehuda says, it's not that there were doors placed on the back of the oxen, as the Mishnah in Parah told us, but rather they would just bring the oxen themselves, meaning to say, the oxen in and of themselves would constitute an ohel that would protect these kids from becoming tame. Why is that a problem? An ox is obviously not a man-made ohel. It's a natural ohel, right? The stomach and the back, every part of the ox that will, you know, theoretically protect you if you go underneath the ox, that's all natural. And yet Rabbi Yehuda says that they wouldn't bring doors, they would just use the oxen as an ohel. Isn't that an indication that Rabbi Yehuda does subscribe to the idea that even natural ohelim constitute an ohel? To which the Gemara says, Ki asa Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Elazar, Moda Rabbi Yehuda Kimlo Egrof, Tani Nami Hachi, Moda Rabbi Yehuda Beshkivenu Venekike Asla. And the Gemara says, you're right. Really, Rabbi Yehuda, generally speaking, also thinks that a naturally made ohel is also an ohel, as long as the ohel is larger than an egrof, larger than a fistful. If it's larger than the size of a fist, then it qualifies as an ohel. And obviously, an ox is much larger than that. And that's why in the Braisa, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that caves and, you know, deep cavities or clefts in the rock also qualify as an ohel, because although they're natural, they're obviously much larger than a fist, and therefore that does qualify as an ohel.
Rabbi, yeah. The space.
So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the definition of an ohel is that it has to be bigger than an egg roof, bigger than a fist. So that's even, you know, it's going to be even smaller than that, right? So again, our Gemara now is not really interested in defining the parameters or the dimensions of an ohel. We're trying to figure out, you know, does an ohel need to be natural or does it need to be man-made? And at this point, Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't really matter. As long as it's larger than an egg roof, than a fist, then that's the definition of an ohel according to him. So now the Gemara asks Vahare Deles, the Ishba Kama Egrofin, Vikatani Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lohayu Mavian Delaso Sela Shvarim. But the problem is like this. If according to Rabbi Yehuda, the definition of an OL is that it has to be at least an egrof, at least a fist, so why then did Rabbi Yehuda comment in the Tosefta on the Mishnah in Parah? Why did he say that they wouldn't bring doors on the back of the oxen, but rather the oxen themselves? In other words, presumably the doors would also qualify as an OL. The doors were much larger than a fist, so why wouldn't the doors qualify as an OL? So the Gemara says, you're right. So Abaye says, you're right. The doors would have qualified as an OL, and they could have been used as an OL to protect the kids from becoming Tamei. It was just that it wasn't necessary, because the oxen also constituted an OL. So that's why, in other words, that's what Reb Huda meant. I mean, he meant to say that the doors were not necessary, but not that they would not have been a valid OL. That's one answer. Rava Amar, lo hayu mevin delasos kol ikr, shemepnei shadaito shaltino gasa alav, shemayotzi rosho o echad meivara viyatame bekever hatahom. So the Gemara then quotes Rava, who says that the doors, even though, yes, the doors would have been a valid OL, but they were a little bit too risky to bring the doors, because the problem was that the kids may have been overconfident while sitting on the doors. They may have accidentally overextended a limb or their head or a part of their body that may have theoretically become tame had there been a dead body buried deep underground. And in fact, the Gemara says, Tani Kivasi de Rava, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lohayu Mavin Delasos Kol Iker, Mimne Shadaito Shaltino Gasalov, Shemayotzi Rosho, Echon Meivara Vitami Bekever Hatahom. So again, the Brisa basically echoes that same idea. They would not use the doors because there was maybe this misplaced confidence that the kids, you know, may have thought that they were going to be fine, and they may have overextended a limb, and they may have become tamei. Ela mevi'in shvarim hamitzrim shekreso sed rechavos v'hatinokos yoshin agaban v'chosos shel evin bidayan higil l'shiloach yardu milim v'aluv yashu lehen agaban. So again, they used these Egyptian oxen that were very, very wide. They were very, very big oxen, and this way, the oxen would certainly qualify as an OL, and there was no chance that the kids were going to overextend their hands or their head or whatever and become tummy. Okay, then the Gemara asks,
what were they suggesting, that they just lay a door flat?
Yeah, basically the suggestion was to have a door running over the edges of the ox. In other words, the assumption initially was that the ox may not have been so big. It may have been like a relatively skinny ox. So you want to make sure, in case there's any dead bodies buried deep underground next to the area where the ox is walking, the door would have theoretically constituted an OHEL.
But was it an actual door? Or was
it was a real door. In other words, they would take a door and lie it flat. It would like overhang both sides of the ox. And this way, in case there was a source of tumah underground, that door would act as an OHEL to prevent the tumah from making the kid tame. But Rava says that doing that is dangerous because the kid may be overconfident, maybe he'll slip off the door, maybe he'll overextend the hand. So he says it's a better idea just to get a bigger ox. Just get a bigger ox, and this way the ox will protect the kid anyway. Okay, then the Gemara says, Vahare mita, deyesh v'kame egrofim, usnad Rabbi Yehuda omer, noagim hayinu, shehayinu yeshenet tachas hamita bifnei azkenim. Now going back to our actual topic of sukkah, which is that we saw in the Mishnah yesterday that Rabbi Yehuda said that they used to sleep underneath a bed in a sukkah. But the question is, the bed is certainly considered an OHEL because it's definitely more than an egrof, it's more than a fist. So what was the justification to sleep under the bed? If the bed is an OHEL, then it's essentially separating from you and the sukkah. Then it's not really called part of the sukkah. So how could Rabbi Yehuda say that they slept under the bed? So the Gemara says, no, shiny mita ho legaba asuya. A bed is different, because although a bed is an OHEL, but a bed is not meant to be underneath. It's meant to be, in other words, you're meant to be on the bed. So therefore, underneath the bed doesn't really qualify as an OHEL. So the Gemara says, okay, shvarim nami legaba asuya. By that logic, what about oxen? It's not, no one's ever meant to be underneath an ox. You're meant to be riding on top of the ox. So by that logic, why would an ox qualify as an OHEL? So the Gemara says, no, ki asa rav and amar Rabbi Elazar, shiny shvarim holu meginim al haroim mechamim neachamu vikshamim neakshamim. Because people do use the underbelly of an ox, like the shepherds, when they want to be protected from the elements and the heat or from the rain, they would in fact go and take shelter on the underside of the ox. So it's not unheard of to use an ox as a form of protection. So the Gemara says, "Yachi mitanami holu megina almin almin sandalim shatachdeh." By that logic, you can use the area underneath a bed to store your shoes. So why is that not qualify as an OHEL, and therefore should have been problematic to sleep underneath the bed? So Ela Amar Rava, shiny shvarim holu vasuim lohagim abanime ayim shalahen shene amar or uvasar tal bisheni uvatzamosi gidim to sochicheni. So one possibility is that an ox is designed to protect. In other words, the entire composition, the physical makeup of the ox, the underbelly, the spinal column, everything is meant to basically protect it. In other words, to keep in all of its innards, its intestines, everything is meant to be protected. The Gemara cites a pasuk from Eov that says that the skin and the flesh, you know, will cloak me, and the bones and the sinews, you know, I've been knitted together with bones and sinews. Meaning to say that those parts of the ox qualify as an OHEL. The pasuk in Eov uses the word tesochicheni, like schach or sukkah, meaning to say that everything is considered to be sheltered in. The Iba Yesema, Rabbi Huda Letamei, Da'amar, sukkah. The other possibility, this is a big machlokas that we've already referenced briefly in the first parak, throughout the Masechta, which is a sukkah meant to be temporary or permanent? So there are many, many Tanaim and Amoraim who hold, like the sheet of Rabbi Huda, that sukkah diras keva, but you know, that a sukkah really needs to be a permanent fixture. So if the sukkah is a permanent fixture, the bed in the sukkah is just a temporary structure. So Rabbi Huda holds that the temporary structure of the bed is not going to be mevatel, it's not going to undermine the permanent status of the sukkah. So the Gemara asks, v'har Reb Shimon d'amar nami sukkah diras keva b'inan, v'asi olal raim mevatel olal keva. But Reb Shimon also believes in this notion that a sukkah needs to be a permanent structure, and yet somehow Reb Shimon seems to assume that the bed is not going to be batel, meaning if you sleep under the bed, you're not yotzi the mitzvah sukkah. So why? So in other words, why does he disagree with Rabbi Huda? So the Gemara says, no, b'ha pligi. Mar savar asei ol arayim vatel ol keva, umar savar lo asei ol arayim vatel ol keva. The machlokes basically is whether the temporary structure of the bed is sufficient to override or to undermine the permanent structure of the sukkah. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Amar Reb Shimon, ma'isa b'tavi avdo, right? Reb Shimon quoted the incident that happened with Tavi, the servant of Rabbi Gamliel, and he slept under the bed of the sukkah, and Rabbi Gamliel pointed out the fact that in other words, that Tavi knows the halacha since he's an Eved, and an Eved is putter for mitzvah seisha as man grama, so he says, oh, you see how big of a Talmud Chacham he is, that he's davka sleeping under the bed, right, to demonstrate that he's really not chayiv in the mitzvah in the first place. So the Gemara says, Tanya Amar Rabbi Shimon, misichas osh Rabbi Gamliel lamanu shnei dvarim, Lamanu she'avadim turim in asuka, Lamanu she'hayoshi tachas amita lo yatzei dechovaso. So from the speech of Rabbi Gamliel, we derive two things. First of all, we see that an eved is not chayiv in sukkah, as we've already mentioned, and also that one who sleeps underneath a bed in a sukkah is also not yotzei, because again, the bed is acting as an oel, it's a form of separation between you and the sukkah. So the Gemara asks, v'lema mi devarim shel Rabbi Gamliel. Why does the Gemara use the very strange lashon misichaso shel Rabbi Gamliel, from the speech, from the conversation of Rabbi Gamliel? Usually, you would just say mi devarim shel Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara says, milsa agavorchi kamash malon. The Gemara harps on the lashon of sicha, which is based on a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that even the, you know, quote unquote idle conversation or mundane words of a Talmud Chacham also must be analyzed. The Gemara derives from a pasuk in the very beginning of Tehillim that says ve'alehu lo yibol, which literally means that their stalks should not wither. It means the Gemara in Avodah Zarah explains that even the quote unquote mundane, you know, regular speech of a Talmud Chacham has to be taken seriously, has to be analyzed. That's why the Gemara uses the term sicha, because they analyzed even what appeared to be the mundane speech of Rabbi Gamliel, from which they were able to derive halacha. Okay, then the Mishnah says, Hasomech sukaso bechare hamita kshera, Rabbi Huda omerim eino yichol olamod bifnei atzma psula. Let's say one leans their sukkah against the legs of a bed. So the Tanna Kamma says the sukkah is kosher. Rabbi Huda says, if you're leaning it so heavily against the legs of a bed to the point that the sukkah cannot stand on its own, then it's possible. So the Gemara asks, my time of the Rabbi Huda. Why does Rabbi Huda say such a sukkah is possible? So the Gemara says, pligi ba Rabbi Zera v Rabbi Abba bar Malon. It's machlokas. Chad amar mipnei she'ein la keva, v'chad amar mipnei she'ma'amida b'davar ha'makabel tuma. One reason why it's possible is because it's not fixed in place. If you lean the sukkah so heavily against the bed frame or against the legs of the bed, so the sukkah is not standing on its own 2 feet, so it's not considered a valid sukkah. The other possibility is that since you're leaning it against the legs of a bed frame is a kli, it's makabel tuma. And as we know, you cannot use anything, not only schach, in other words, not only can schach not be makabel tuma, but anything which is leaning against the schach or propping up the schach is also problematic if it's makabel tuma. So my binai, what's the difference between these two opinions? In other words, at the end of the day, everyone agrees the sukkah is pasul. So the Gemara says, kigon shenot shvudin shal barzel v'sikei chalem. The nafkamina would be if, let's say, you inserted metal skewers into the ground to hold up the schach. Lemanda amar lefi she'in lekeva hare yesh lekeva. Umanda amar minisha mamida b'davar makabel tuma hare mamida b'davar makabel tuma. So if the issue is that the sukkah is not permanent or fixed in place, but so by inserting the metal skewers in the ground, the sukkah is now stable. It's not gonna be reliant on the legs of the bed anymore. But if the issue is that putting the schach on a davar makabel tuma, so the metal skewers are obviously makabel tuma, and the sukkah would still be possible according to that opinion. Amar Abaye lushanu el samach avol sikech agav hamita ksher. Then Abaye has a further qualification that which the Mishnah said that leaning a sukkah against the bed frame or against the bed legs is possible according to Rabbi Huda. That's only when you're leaning it against it. But let's say, for example, you put schach on top of the legs or the frame of the bed, so that's okay. So my taima leman damer lefi she'in lekeva harei yesh lekeva leman damer mnei shemamida bedavar hamakabel tuma harei ein mamida bedavar hamakabel tuma. If the issue is permanence, so again, by putting schach on top of the bed legs, it's permanent. If the issue is a davar hamakabel tuma, so here it's two steps removed, because by putting schach on top of the legs of the bed, the legs themselves are not makabel tuma; it's the bed frame. So since it's two steps removed, that's what we call a mamid de mamid, because it's two steps removed. Therefore, it's still going to be considered a valid sukkah, and you would be yotzei in that scenario.